Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl, and I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together, this is...
Me! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Good, Tater, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. Tell me, how was your week? Did everyone get to drink this week?
Well, we did go out and tried some things. As a matter of fact, it was I went to the place that we went to for to eat because it had a good draft beer selection. And I'll get into more about that. But the thing that surprised me, they had a new cocktail menu. We've been to this place before. It's Bonoff, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where that is. They had a brand new cocktail menu. So I don't know if they got a new bartender or what. But when we were looking through it, one of the drinks on there had as one of its ingredients, Baron Jaeger.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. And so I said, wow, that's what we just did that episode on there a few weeks ago. So now I didn't really want it because it was a gin drink. They had it mixed with gin. But so I got mom, I convinced mom that she would like it. So I got her to get it so I could try it. I didn't like it because of the gin, not because of the Baron Jaeger. And I really wanted to ask for a shot of Baron Jaeger, but I wasn't sure if they would do that.
You should have. I'm sure they would have done that. What was the drink? It was just gin, Baron Jaeger, what, lemon?
It had a couple of things in it. To me, a lot of the cocktails that they had on the new menu, they had too many things in them.
Too many things. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Common problem.
There's like five or six ingredients in every one of them.
Classic mistake.
Yeah. To me, that was a little bit overdone because you couldn't enjoy any one element of it because there were so many elements in there.
I mean, I feel like you can make cocktails with lots of ingredients if you know how to balance each ingredient, but you should never add anything that takes away from what's already there. So I do agree with what additive, not reductive cocktail making.
But I was just so surprised to see that on there. And then mom was saying, well, that's going to be too sweet. That's going to be too sweet. And I tried to explain to her, no, I know that it seems like it would, but it's not because of the part of the honeycomb that they make it from. And so she tried it. She said, no, you're right. If anything, it was a little bit on the strong side.
Yeah.
It was more of a dry drink.
Really?
So yeah, which surprised me too. So I don't think enough of that Baron Jaeger was coming through to suit my taste.
That's funny because I have literally been making myself, like after we did that episode, I've been making myself Baron Jaeger sours all week. Like that's been my go-to nightcap. And I've been doing like an ounce of, I mean, I like a lot of citrus, but I like a lot of sweet too. So I do like an ounce of lemon, an ounce of Baron Jaeger, and then 2 ounces of, I've done gin and bourbon and mezcal. I tried all three.
Yeah.
And they all worked really well. So like an ounce of Baron Jaeger will do plenty of sweetness for your drink.
Yeah, but I think that the problem was it was probably buried down in there, putting in like a quarter of an ounce or something like that, you know?
Yeah, I wouldn't use it like if I had a stirred drink because it's a little bit thicker than your classic liqueur, but it's not quite as thick as like a sugar syrup. So I wouldn't do it. If it was like a stirred drink, that might be too strong.
Yeah. But so the main reason that I went there, though, was the beer selection. They have the best beer selection in town of beers on draft. And the reason I wanted to do that, I've been reading a lot of articles here lately about the craft beer industry is really suffering. I don't know that some of them have said it's an effect from COVID. I'm not sure why that would be, but there's quite a few of the craft breweries have either closed down or filed chapter 11 and are reorganizing. And I don't want to lose any of these beers. So I figure I need to go out and start drinking some of them to keep them going.
Yeah, it's an interesting turn. I don't know if it's like a sign of things to come. I certainly hope not, but like craft beer was one of the first resurgences to happen in the American market back in like the 80s. And now that it's, it's sort of people are losing interest in it. I would think that maybe it's because of the explosion of like the seltzer market and the bottled cocktail market, that the people that would just drink a beer because they wanted something simple are, they now have more options.
Well, also the cocktail revolution too may have something to do with it.
Well, yeah, a lot of beer drinkers now don't want to drink beer anymore.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people went to beers because you didn't want, I mean, that's the way I was. I didn't want a rum and Coke or something like that, you know? Yeah. So that's why I started drinking beer all the time, and I kind of gave up on it. Now that there's this resurgence in properly making cocktails, then I usually go through the menu looking for something that I, you know, that I like and, or that I think I like, or that looks interesting.
Yeah.
So, okay, but I love a good draft beer, and we have a couple of craft breweries in the area. And so I try to get their things whenever possible and drink them.
Well, I don't think good beer is going anytime soon, but I do think that is an interesting shift in the market that, I don't know. I hear other people talking about it too. Like, oh no, what are we going to do? Like, where's beer going? It's like, I don't think it's going anywhere. I think people just have more opportunity to drink different things. So
yeah,
it's good and it's bad. I drank an interesting beer this week. It's called Good Times. It's the brewery and the beer name, and it's a non-alcoholic IPA that's new on the market. We're selling it at the bar I work on, and the continual interest in non-alcoholic cocktails is really fascinating to me. I kind of thought it was going to be a flash in the pan thing, but people are really still demanding variety in the non-alcoholic quadrant of drinking, which is, I think it's cool. I think it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I liked it. Like, I'm not a big beer drinker. I like beer. It's funny. We were talking about this earlier. I've been redecorating one of the rooms in my apartment this whole week. And I don't, like, if I'm doing like housework, like homework, I feel like I want to drink a beer, you know, like, I don't know why that feels right. Like, if I'm building shelves, I want to drink a beer. And usually my go-to is Ruby Redbird, which is a lower alcohol, like grapefruit pilsner. It's a very light, or I think it's a grapefruit wheat beer, but it's a very light beer. You can drink a couple of those and you can still build furniture. But I had my sample of my non-alcoholic beer. I'm like, this also feels like furniture building adjacent. And I found it very, very good for that. Like, a six pack of non-alcoholic beer, when you're just trying to like build some furniture, but you want to get the feel of relaxation, but you also want to be able to properly align like hex screws. I think it works very well.
Well, you know, the one thing that it can't be is that once you've drank craft beers, you're not going to go back to drinking Miller and Budweiser and Utipole and Schlitz and, you know, all those kind of things. You know, you there's just no way. I mean, maybe you go to cocktails, or maybe you go to seltzers, or maybe you go to wine, but you're not going to go back to drinking those kind of beers. I just can't imagine that.
I get what you're saying there. Like, because there are a lot of the non-alcoholic beers that have come previously in the market have been erring more on the side of like very light lager pilsner styles, which I think works better with a non-alcoholic beer. I do think this Good Times, like being an IPA, like it fills the void more for a beer drinker and less for somebody that just wants to, like, I don't know, feel a part of the party, but like have something in their hand.
Yeah.
I those are two different groups of people. So that is a true point. When I just want a beer to drink, I'm actually okay with cheap, shitty beer, but I'm not a beer drinker. For a beer drinker, I don't think you would be happy with like a Heineken Zero.
No. Well, and I'm not just talking about the no alcohol beers. I'm talking about, you wouldn't go back to, once you've gotten drinking craft beers, you're not going to go back to drinking regular like Miller or Budweiser or something like that. Yeah. That was more what I meant. Because I kind of consider the zero alcohol beers kind of in a category all their own. That's something specific, like a niche type thing.
Yeah.
That, you know, people are looking for. Maybe you're, you know, maybe you're hitting the wagon and you don't want to go off, but you still like that taste. So you kind of, you know, drink a Guinness Zero or something, you know, they have those out there too.
Yeah. Well, you know, not really Not, I guess not alcohol free, but probably if this is maybe a topic for people that we have a lot of people that listen to the show that do not drink, and I'm always surprised by that, and I think that's super cool. But I feel bad because there's not always stuff you can enjoy from this show. You can't go out and buy something that we talk about. But this, I like to do episodes occasionally that is for that group of people, and I think this episode kind of works because on the topic of beer, I wanted to talk about beer cheese.
Because beer cheese,
Well,
two things man loves, beer and cheese.
I mean, I was talking, I was hanging out with a chef buddy of mine, and we were talking about like weird like things we grew up with that we thought were everywhere, and then they weren't everywhere. They're just like in the specific regions we grew up with in. And we were talking about beer cheese because he grew up in Ohio. I grew up in West Virginia, but beer cheese, I remember beer cheese being like, my specific memory of it was we had it at like a New Year's Eve party when I was in my like preteen age. And it was like a little plastic tub of something called beer cheese. Like I thought beer cheese was just a normal thing that people knew about.
Well, yeah, it seems like it. I mean, there's nothing secretive about that. Beer cheese,
It's
beer
all
and
in the
cheese.
name. It's all in
Okay,
the name.
why not? Yeah, it's all right there. There's a map. The name is a roadmap to it.
Yeah, but I guess it's not. It's the same as like, but we say that. But then the same thing is like true for what like apple butter. Like I thought everybody had apple butter all the time. That's not
Well,
true around the world,
no.
and not around the country.
Well, also, apple butter is not like apples and butter smushed together, you know.
Well, no, but
But
like.
beer cheese is pretty much beer and cheese just smushed together.
Not ex okay, not exactly. All right, before we get into it, before we get into the history, beer cheese. Yes, it is cheese and beer, specifically usually like sharp cheddar beer. And usually it has like garlic and then some level of spice. It can range from mild to hot. It'll have anything from like mustard, jalapeno, horseradish, cayenne. It's a flavored cheese spread. Sometimes butter will be mixed in as well to kind of give it some more like spreadability, but it's a rich, spicy, garlicky cheese spread.
I think what I've seen it used most is you heat it up so that it's kind of melty and then dip pretzels in it.
Well, that is actually an interesting discrepancy in cultural expressions, in that some people consider cold beer cheese to be true beer cheese, and some people think hot beer cheese is better. The originators of beer cheese, which I will get to, preferred the cold beer cheese, but hot beer cheese came along. I like that anything tiny and weird like this, you can look into and be like, oh, there's so many opinions here. There's so much.
Well, it's one of those things too that people took very personal in its time.
Yeah, no, well, they still do. I think they still do. So, all right, before we get the term beer cheese has a very specific origin point. But there are things that basically are beer cheese that existed before the American version of beer cheese. The one that's most commonly cited is something called Obadsta, and that is a Bavarian dish that originated somewhere around the 1900s. So the story goes, there was an innkeeper, Katharina Eisenreich, and she ran the Braustuber Weihenstephan, which was an inn connected to the Weihenstephan Brewery. She ran it
Which
from
I love
19.
their beer.
Oh, their beer is fantastic.
Oh, it's great.
She ran it from 1920 to 1958. And yes, that the Weihenstephaner Brewery is one of the oldest breweries in the world. That's still in operation. Its roots go all the way back to 725. And who do you think started it? Who starts all the good booze things?
Monks.
Yep.
They were Weihenstephan monks.
Yep.
I
So
think I bought an album of theirs. I don't know. The Weihenstephan monks.
we have monks to thank for Weihenstephan. So I guess we have monks to thank for what eventually became beer cheese. But yeah, so Katerina was trying to come up with a so, like a something that would just sort of take care of what she had like leftovers. She had leftover beer that was about to spoil. She had onions. She had spices. She just mixed it together to provide a sort of a cheap, savory dish to serve her guests for breakfast. I love the idea of just getting a wad of cheese for breakfast.
Yeah, with soaked in beer.
Yeah, just some ripe cheese. Now, this is a big difference between modern day American beer cheese versus this recipe, the Obatzda beer cheese. They use more like a Camembert or like a Brie, a very ripe kind of smellier cheese than what we're comfortable with here in America. Unfortunately for us, not for them, the stinky cheese is better. But it was some sort of ripe cheese, some onions, paprika, and it was a hit. Like, this was a big hit for her. Other beer gardens around the area started picking it up, and it became this kind of go-to snack to have with beer.
I'm not much on stinky cheese. I don't think I would like that.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, you might like the American version better. Although,
yeah, I would like the American.
Do you like? I feel like I don't. Do you like cheese? I feel like I don't think of you as a cheese guy.
Well, I eat cheese on a sandwich, but I'm not the kind to just sit around at a, you know, and they have a charcuterie tray there or whatever, and it's got blocks of cheese, and just keep throwing blocks of cheese in my mouth. I'm not much on that.
You just don't eat cheese.
No, I eat it on something to enhance something. I have nothing against it on a burger or a chicken sandwich or even melted over a hot dog. I'll even eat it over a hot dog, but and on spaghetti, put some on spaghetti, you know,
but like a dip, like if you had a pretzel and some cheese.
Yeah, I would eat it with pretzel and a cheese. Yeah. Right, I would not dip vegetables in it. No, I try to avoid.
Well, you don't eat vegetables in general. That's a problem. We should work on that.
Except the potato. It goes along
that
with the meat.
That doesn't really count. A potato counts. It's its own category. It's potato
it's
category.
It's the only one I like, and it doesn't count.
Yeah, it doesn't count. It doesn't. There's no fiber there. I love potatoes. Are great for you. Potatoes are fine. They're healthy. They're just not the same as a vegetable.
Well, that's why I count French fries as vegetables. They come from potatoes.
No. All right. We're going to. That's you should eat more vegetables, Dad, and potatoes don't count, but and cheese definitely doesn't count. This concept of beer and cheese, it continues to pop up after the 1920s. We see it all around Eastern and Western Europe, and it all kind of takes on its own name and ingredient, you know. And sometimes the recipe doesn't have beer, sometimes it does. It always has spices. It has different vegetables in it, different flavorings. I think my favorite is around this time you get a recipe from Serbia that's called Ernevis Salata, which means chaos salad. I think if I ordered a salad and you gave me a lump of cheese and beer, that would feel like a chaos salad.
That's a good name, Chaos Salad.
Chaos Salad. That's another good metal band.
Yeah. Chaos Salad.
But of course, any of these early 1900s cultures are not credited with the creation of beer cheese specifically. That comes about in the 1930s and in, of all places, Kentucky.
In the hills of Kentucky.
That is not, I mean, it makes sense, but it also is like, it's surprising that it's not. I mean, like, we had a lot of immigrants, you know, in America from all over Europe. The idea that somebody, multiple people brought the idea of beer and cheese with them and it was a normal thing that was had is not absurd, right? Like, that was probably true in America long before this. But in Kentucky specifically, it is accredited to Johnny Allman, who was a retired police officer, decided to get into the restaurant business in the 1930s, and he opened a place called the Driftwood around Boonesboro, which is in Clark County, Kentucky. He
was not one of the Allman brothers.
No, he was not one of the Allman brothers.
He was an Allman brother, but not those Allman brothers.
He had an Allman cousin. Still not the favorite. So the cousin. Joe Allman was he was the head chef at a catering company, and they kind of brainstormed this idea of like an idea of something that, like, you know, like a light app that they could serve their guests to make them want to buy more beer. And Joe Allman invented his Snappy Cheese, and Snappy Cheese was kind of what we already talked about. It was this combination of cheese, it had some beer, and it had some spices. And the idea behind it was you'd serve it with some vegetables, some crackers, and it would make people thirsty. It had some spice, it had some salt, it was fatty. You wanted something cold and clean to wash
alcoholic.
It down with. Yes. So yeah. It would help drive the sale of beers, which it did.
Because Yeah, because every good restaurateur knows your money comes from the alcohol sales.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You make
so you want to push that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they made this little snappy cheese. They, you know, it was one of these, it wasn't free like in Katharina's serving of it, but it was one of the go-to apps, and it was very popular. People loved it. So much so that people started imitating it all around Kentucky and then surrounding areas. Restaurants were making their own version of snappy cheese, beer cheese, to sell to their patrons. And now the original Driftwood and even subsequent rebuildings of it, the Almonds restaurants, suffered not one, not two, but three fires before they finally decided to retire from the restaurant business.
Yeah, this guy must have been snake bit, because said at one time he owned three different restaurants along this river, and he eventually lost them all. One of them burning down three times. Finally, the third time he said, "Hell, that's it. I'm not rebuilding it anymore." Another one he lost in a card game. He was playing cards and bet his hotel or bet his restaurant, and he lost. So he lost one in a card game too. So this guy did not have good luck.
Well, I mean, maybe it was karma, who knows, but you know, in whatever case, he could not keep a restaurant open. He eventually, you know, they retired, they sold off the properties and the namesakes, and other places kind of took up the helm of the snappy cheese. One of the particular ones that you still see around is Halls on the River was a restaurant at the time, which was just literally across the street from the original Driftwood. And they were one of the first to produce a commercial version of beer cheese to get in like big chain grocery stores, specifically Kroger. It was sold in Kroger. That's the one I've seen. I've seen that. It might still be there. I'm assuming it still is, but that's the one I remember, is the Halls beer cheese.
Yeah, I think I remember seeing that one too. It's funny. I went to their website and looked, and they're shut down in their production right now. It didn't say why. It just said, don't order any. We don't have any.
Oh, shit.
I don't know. Maybe it burnt down. Maybe they just hadn't told us.
The luck finally caught up with them. Yeah. Who knows? Well, there was a consensus, I guess, among original Kentucky beer cheese fans that the Hall's mass-produced recipe was a far cry from what it was supposed to be, the original recipe. And that has led to, I think, in more recent years, a bit of a fervor over beer cheese, at least in Kentucky. They have embraced their beer cheese history. They have a beer cheese festival, which started in 2009. So you can go, you can taste beer cheese made both at the professional brands up against like local brands, up against individual producers. Like, you know, you can go and taste it. There's a beer cheese boulevard that you can go taste all the beer cheese on.
This is in Winchester, Kentucky, where this is held.
It's the second Saturday in June. So it's coming up. Not far. Not far from you, Dad. You could go.
No, it's not far at all, because it's just south of Lexington, and we're like 2 hours from Lexington.
You should go. So you should go to the beer cheese
festival. It's southeast, so that's a little bit closer than Lexington, probably.
I bet they've got some good beer at the beer cheese festival.
Yeah, they should have good beer at the beer cheese festival. There's only two things to do there, beer and cheese. You might as well have good ones.
Well, and even if you can't make it for the festival, they also have a beer cheese trail, which takes you through, 8 different restaurants that have their own specific recipe of beer cheese. And you can go and you can go to them all. And if you go to them all, you get a t-shirt as a reward.
It said that if you plan carefully, you could go on the bourbon trail and the beer cheese trail at the same time.
Now that sounds like a plan.
Yeah.
That sounds like a way to stay sober enough to enjoy the bourbon trail because you're eating
the cheese and it'll soak up the beer.
Buttery cheese.
Bourbon.
Exactly.
That's like bourbon barrel cheese.
The beer is negligible. The cheese is what matters. It's going to soak up that bourbon.
That's right.
Somebody needs to put that together. The bourbon and beer, bourbon beer cheese trail. There we go.
Well, they do have a bourbon beer, or no, not bourbon beer cheese. You're right. It's a different, they have the beer cheese and then they have the bourbon trail, but yeah.
Should do it together. You should do it. You should do both. Dad, originate it. You got time. You got time to figure it out. You live close enough.
I,
You and mom, take a long weekend. Go do the bourbon and beer cheese trail.
I've got too much going on. I can't do that. I'll be a participant, but I can't do that.
You can plan it. You got time.
They have local experts for that.
No, I don't. You don't have to design it. I just mean you should go and do it.
Oh, go and do it. I thought you wanted me to go set it up.
No, absolutely. Just go enjoy it. You live close enough. Okay.
Yeah, we are. We're very close. We could do that.
That's a... Well, there are other things that, of course, there's a million recipes that butt up against this combination. There's even beer cheese soup, which has its own origin story, which just sounds like, of all the things, like if it's like a cold winter day, to give me three words that I want in a bowl, beer cheese soup.
Beer cheese and soup.
Yeah. So this is not. I don't think it was necessarily the lightning strike moment happened in Kentucky in the 1930s, but they were the ones to capitalize it on the most. And they were named the official creators of beer cheese not too long ago. So
well, at least you would.
They trademarked the term, at least.
You would think that maybe beer cheese is not one of those things for very discerning taste. However, it is rumored that the Queen of England, God rest her soul.
Oh, yeah.
Once was leaving Lexington, Kentucky. I don't know what she was doing where she was leaving Lexington, Kentucky. But as she boarded her plane, it was noted she was taking multiple tubs of beer cheese with her on her flight back to the palace. So she liked that stuff and she was taking some back with her because she was really impressed with the beer cheese. So that was the Queen of England, by golly.
Well, Queen of England loves beer cheese. Well,
yeah,
it's okay. You can still have beer cheese too. Don't hold it against beer cheese. Well, I think it's funny because I remember being young and seeing it and thinking like, is that made with beer or not? Like, can I get drunk off of this cheese?
I don't think you can.
No, you can't. There's a negligible amount of beer in it. I'm quite positive that like, if you're somebody, it depends on, if you're somebody that doesn't touch anything involving alcohol, I respect that. But if you're somebody that's like, I just can't like have serious alcohol, I think you could eat beer cheese. This is okay.
Yeah, I like the way they noted that they add flattened beer to the cheese.
Yeah. Effervescent cheese.
Yeah. They want flattened beer in their cheese.
Yeah. It's beer for the flavor, not beer for the bubbles or the booze.
Hey, I've got some bubbly cheese in here. when you talked about Kroger carrying it, I don't know if everybody knows what Kroger is, but it's a chain of grocery stores that are very prominent in this region. But the first time that term came to national attention, one of the, the mom and the sisters that were the country singers that came out of Kentucky, but they were talking about, they won their first Grammy Award and they said something like, yeah, now we can't even go Krogerin without getting recognized. and all these people were like, Krogerin, what is that, fishing? What? They didn't know what Krogerin meant.
Now I don't know. This is not, I was trying to think of
the Judds. Yeah.
See, I remember the Kroger being like a normal grocery store when I was young, but then by the time I was a teenager, they had the nice Krogers that started opening. Mm-hmm. The Krogers with like a sushi bar in them.
Yeah.
And then we started saying Krogers. That's not a Kroger. That's a Crochet.
Yeah. That's right.
Crochet has a wine department. Crochet has a stinky cheese counter. Crochet has sushi.
Yeah. We never had sushi in Kroger's when I was growing up as a kid.
Yeah. But I still, when I'm home, I mean, you know this. You still get sushi for mom at the Kroger.
Mom loves Kroger sushi.
Kroger sushi's pretty good.
Yeah.
They got somebody behind the counter making it fresh. It's good sushi.
But that turned on most of the nation to what Kroger's was. And we can't go Krogerin without getting recognized. Go Krogerin? What the hell are they doing? What's Krogerin?
I give a lung to have a Kroger in my neighborhood. Well, there you go. If you've ever been curious about beer cheese, that's kind of it for the history.
Yeah, and the state of Kentucky has recognized it and basically said, we are the origin state of beer cheese. I think they did that in like 2002 or something like that.
I think 2013. It was more recently.
The 2013, is that what it was? Yeah, and said, we're the ones. That's it. Nobody else can make it and be the original beer cheese.
They did not get like an appellation of control. Like you cannot, it's not like it's not like champagne. If you combine beer and cheese outside of Kentucky, you don't have to call it sparkling cheese or something.
You can only combine beer and cheese in Kentucky. You can't combine it anywhere else.
No, you can absolutely do that. And again, like there's definitely a large precedent for it in the rest of the Europe, predating Kentucky by far. But we had a lot
chaos there, though.
Well, it's chaos salad. those people probably came to Kentucky and then, you know, made it for their family, who made it to their family, who made it for their family. Because there's a lot crossover immigration there. But whatever the case, I do think it's, you know, again, like it's alcohol history adjacent. I think part of the allure of it is that there's beer in there. I don't know. Yeah.
I figure that you had two hillbillies from Kentucky and they're standing around. It's a lot like the Reese cup. And one had a beer and one had a big hunk of cheese and they ran into each other and is, "Hey, you got your cheese in my beer. No, you got your beer in my cheese. Hey, it's amazing. Let's make beer cheese."
That's how it happened. That's the story.
Just like the Reese cup.
Well, that was fun. We've done a lot of, I feel like, very on course serious episodes lately about liquor history. It was fun to go a little out of pocket here.
Yeah, that was all right. I mean, you know, it's got the word beer in it. That makes it alcohol adjacent, doesn't it?
You can make your own beer cheese easy. You need some cheese and some beer. Some spices. Yeah.
It's right there in the name.
That's it. That's all you need. Well, all right. Well, hey, thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thank you, Tay, for having me. This has been a very cheesy episode.
Of course. My pleasure. Thank you to our Patreon for supporting us. Thank you to our listeners. If you want to ask us questions, episode ideas, if you have other, I don't know, beer or cheese confections that involve liquor, you can tell us about those. You can email us.
Things combined together.
Yeah, why not? NeatTheBoozeCast@gmail.com. You can also talk about that in our Facebook group.
Need the BoozeCast group page on Facebook. Yep. Yeah. Might as well. Spread the cheese.
Spread the cheese, spread the love. All right. Well, I've been Taylor Squirrel.
I've been Tommy Squirrel.
And this has been
Catch myself. I'll try to go, "Jeez."
This has been Jeez.
I was sitting there saying, "Wait a minute. No, it's neat. Don't say cheese." They're not taking our picture. They're recording our voice.
It would have worked. Of all the episodes it would have worked on, it would have worked.